You are listening to WSCA 106.1 FM, streaming at WSCAFM.org. This is Black Name Meditations, Friday nights 9 p.m. until 1 a.m. Eastern. 4 hours of Black Death, Speed Thrash, Gothic, Doom, Shred, Power, Prog, Folk, and Traditional Metal. My email address, bnmradio@live.com, and my podcast page for broadcasts and interviews is blacknightmeditations.com. Now, the metal world was ablaze with excitement. Trust me, I was a part of that excitement. When Jim Mathias reassembled the Awaken the Guardian lineup for two festival performances last year, Fates Warning, classic Fates Warning, live, amazing. The Keep It True Festival in Germany, the Prog Power Fest down in Atlanta. Thankfully, both of these shows were filmed and recorded for those of us who were not at those shows. For the upcoming DVD and Blu-ray out on April 28th via Metal Blade Records, Awaken the Guardian Live. Can you believe it's been 30 years? I remember getting my first taste of Fates Warning back when I was in school, and obviously way back in the mid-80s. A friend of mine brought into class the cassette, remember those? Cassette of Night on Brock, and he's like, here, I think you'll like this band. Because he knew I liked some of the lighter fare, he was into some of the heavier fare, and we thought we could find some common ground there. I listened to that Night on Brock and cassette when I took home that day. I've been a huge fan of Fates Warning ever since. And Awaken the Guardian Live, this is going to be absolutely amazingly awesome. Can't wait for this one to come out April 28th. And I've got John Arch on the line right now, the man, the myth, the vocalist so many admire since those first three Godly Fates Warning albums. John, you there? Do we have you on the line right now?
I am. Yes! Is on the line. Don't tell about that.
I am so psyched for this because, you know, this is like a bucket list interview for me. I haven't done too many bucket list interviews over the years. And I got to tell you, I never thought that I'd be talking to John Arch because, let's face it, you are not the vocalist of Fates Warning. And then you are. And then you're doing these shows. You've got this live release coming out. And I immediately got in touch with Vince over at Metal Blade and said, dude, we've got to do giveaways. I've got to do interviews. Make sure I'm in on the promotion for Awaken the Guardian Live, and I just assumed it would be Jim, and I've got John. This is awesome, man. I'm such a huge fan, and again, I'll try not to sound like too much of a fanboy, but no guarantees on this one. So,
oh, it's all good, man. Oh, it's my pleasure to be here, Mark, man.
And,
talk to you.
And cool. Thank you so much. So are you really tired of doing all these interviews? You've been doing a ton of press this week for this upcoming release. How sick of you are answering the same questions or any questions over and over again? How tired are you?
You know what? That's it. It's I'm enjoying it because it's cool to talk to everybody. But you're right. You try not to repeat yourself over and over again with the same questions. And especially when you're live, you know, for me, it's a little nerve wracking. You don't want to say the wrong things and you want to keep on track. But all in all, you know what? It's actually pretty cool. And once you settle down and you get into a groove and start talking about things, it's a lot of fun. So it's fun to meet everybody.
Well, I'm glad you have such a great spirit about it, because I know some people think it's cool to talk to the press or cool to talk to the fans, and then others feel that, you know, it's just like another day at the office. This is just part of the job. It's the daily grind. So when you're doing these interviews, and, you know, you've done some over the years when you were not active with your solo work, with the album that you did with Jim a few years ago, you've done a few interviews, but not a whole lot. So I'm wondering if the press, if people are asking you the same questions over and over again, the same exact ones, I mean, are they wanting to just reminisce about the old days? What kind of themes are you getting from these interviews from the press you've been doing?
Yeah, some of them can be repetitive, but I've found that, interviews from like all over the world, they're asking really good questions, pertaining to, yeah, we're going all the way back to the beginning, and what was it like to go back on stage again, and what you've been doing in between? So some of them are repetitive, but some of them are really good questions. Every now and then somebody will really stump you, and you're just standing with your mouth open, like, oh boy, I don't even have an answer to this one. Somebody asked me, there were other bands like Queensryche and Dream Theater, and they were trying to compare the success between, why were they more successful and as far as, more recognition, saying that, Fates Warning maybe was a little, underrated. And I had absolutely no answer to that whatsoever. I don't know.
Well, I don't think anybody really knows why some bands wind up being successful when others you would think should be and then aren't. And Yeah, I totally understand what you're saying, being stumped. I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of the people doing the interviews with you are fans like myself and probably know more about your history than probably you even remember.
Well, exactly. Or what I can remember 30 years ago is some of the questions are like, I have to think hard to think back, like, what was your favorite moment back 30 years ago? And it's like, I don't know. We had a lot of favorite moments, but it's like, it's hard to, reminisce and pick something out of that pile.
Well, hopefully I'll get to a couple of questions. It won't stump you too much. It'll have you thinking, but hopefully it won't be too repetitive. We'll get to that. But I will say I was very pleasantly surprised when you were the one that was going to be doing the press for this upcoming live release. It's not just a double CD. It's a Blu-ray, DVD as well. There are vinyl packages out there, T-shirts. So much to get for Awaken the Guardian Live. But I just assumed it would be Jim. But Joe, Steve and Frank, they were in the band too for these performances. They're part of the classic lineup. They were at the shows and Fates is Jim's band, and I'm like, wow, how did John wind up being the one doing the press for this? And I gotta tell you, you're the best choice, by the way. Marketing wise it was genius to get you to agree with this. And so other than these interviews, are there any other promotional things in the works for Awaken the Guardian Live? Is it just the typical interviews? I mean, what else is in the works to put it out there to the community that everybody needs to be buying this album?
As far as I know, it's like whatever press Metal Blade does. And the fans, when they find out about it, they're spreading the word on Facebook, any social media. And then, these interviews that have been going on for a week straight. I think that's it as far as I know.
Oh, as far and until they throw something else at you, like, John, do this. Okay, all right.
Exactly. Yeah, I don't know. I'll always stand up to the plate when it, comes to somebody showing an interest, and wants to promote and wants to, it's all about the fans, really. I think they deserve something like this. I was, of course, apprehensive about doing this, but, when I thought about it, so many people really never got to see, that first generation of Fate's Warning, right? Because, we did tour a lot around in the States, but I never got to Europe, so this seemed like a perfect opportunity to, kind of relive, what some people I never got to see.
Yeah, and like I was saying earlier, I've been a fan since the mid-80s when you guys were around, and I never saw you back then. Of course, I never dreamed that I'd be seeing you now. And I knew about the shows, and I missed them. But at least we've got this Blu-ray coming out, so it'll almost be like being there. And I like your attitude about being willing to step up to the plate and do any sort of promotion, well, almost any sort of promotion that's asked of you. And since you're right down the street in Connecticut, right from me, I mean, I could just have you drive up here and appear in the studio,
We can do that.
Yeah, I'm not a musician, but hell, you don't need a band. I'll play some instrumentals. You sing over them in the studio. Boom, there we go. More promotion.
I can come up simple. And I could climb Mount Katahdin like I've done before I'm up there. I don't know how close you guys are. Where are you from?
Okay. It's in Portsmouth, so we're on the seacoast. We're by the water.
Oh, seacoast. Okay.
Close
yeah,
enough.
Yeah, so you're, that's like another, 4 hours?
Close enough.
To Katahdin, but hey, whatever. We can consolidate a mountain climbing trip and then come to the studio. Sure. I'm up for that.
I know you're big in the mountain biking, have been for a long time. Plenty of trails for you. So yeah, we got to get you here in the studio, and I'll let you take over the programming for 4 hours. You play all the classic stuff, even the bands you like from the 70s, like Kansas and stuff like that. Let's do it, man. We gotta make this happen. I will say that when I was telling Metal Blade that I want in on the promotion and I want to do an interview, I was thinking, man, maybe I'll get to talk to one of the other guys in the band, and I get to ask him questions like, so what's John really like? is he more David Lee Roth or more like, I don't know, Bono in disguise or something?
Oh God, I don't know what anybody's reply would be to that. I don't know.
So, band rehearsals aside, I know you get asked about what's it like getting back with the band and learning these songs, but I'm more interested in relearning those lyrics, because I'm assuming you didn't remember all of the lyrics. And I got to be honest, even though I'm a fan of those old records, and especially Awaken the Guardian, when I'm listening to the songs, I can't always sing along to them or follow along with the lyrics because I can't remember all those damn lyrics. So what about you relearning those lyrics? I mean, was it your subconscious knowing what you wrote so long ago, or were you just a quick relearner of these lyrics? How easy was it for you?
No, it took some getting used to. I was able we had like a year notice before the shows, before they were all scheduled. So we as individuals rehearsed in our own, whatever, basements, studios, closets, bathrooms, wherever you do your practicing. So I had plenty of time. So it was probably 6 months of rehearsing on my own. And then we got together for whatever the remainder of the time before the shows. But it came back to me pretty quickly, I think, because it's, I was saying that stuff so much, but it's kind of like a muscle memory.
Muscle memory, right.
And yeah. I associate the words with the melodies somehow. I don't know. They just run, parallel with each other. So it's kind of like a muscle memory thing. It came back to me. And of course it took some time because there's no breathing room between notes or the words. Everything is so crammed in there and there's no open space, so it certainly takes, for the breathing and knowing exactly where I'm going to take a deep breath and where I'm going to cut off and where I'm coming back in again. But I was surprised that it came back fairly quickly. That was actually the easy part. And of course, getting my voice back into some resemblance of my old voice was my goal. And again, yeah, I had good nights where it sounded cohesive and my voice sounded clear. And then there was other nights where I sang for half an hour and I hung it up. It's like, dude, this is not going well tonight. So it was a lot of that going on back and forth, good nights, bad nights. But in the end, it was like, okay, when you get on stage, you just, whatever comes out, comes out.
Yeah, and I can imagine, relearning the song since, of course, Jim, he doesn't play those songs anymore. And the band together, gelling, you haven't been together in a while. We all know about that. And, of course, your vocals, we know about that. But that's why I wanted to ask about lyrics, because that's one of the things that could be just as difficult to relearn, and not just remembering them, but, and not just your vocals, but even phrasing those lyrics can be just as difficult as anything else, and especially with the way you sing. I mean, good God. But the Guardian recording lineup, you perform the entire album in order, and thank you for doing it in order. You wind up doing four tracks from the first two records as well as the encore on these performances. So there's a band discussion or more than one discussion about how exact your performances at these shows had to be compared to the album? In other words, how flexible were the performances allowed to be compared to the album, if at all?
Well, just as we played live 30 years ago, we tried to, we did note for note for the album. And I was kind of a stickler to, I didn't care if I killed myself. I was going to do, what I could to reproduce it live, just like it was on the album. And I don't think that was very smart, but it's just something I was compelled to do, and these shows here, I don't want to call it cheating by any stretch. I think I had a good mix of stuff, that people were waiting. Okay, is it going to hit that note? I had a good mix of some things I would sing just a tad differently, and it was very minute, altering some of the melodies, but it just made it a fraction easier to go into like a higher falsetto scream or, singing, like Exodus or whatever. That's a long chorus. And, just getting through that, I altered a few notes and it made a difference actually singing that phrase. So it was small things like that I changed, but nothing major. I think we stay pretty true to the album, especially the musician, like the guitar, bass, everything was pretty much how it was played on the album.
Awesome. And I can appreciate artists wanting to take liberties with their music and please themselves first before they can please anybody else. I get that. But when the fans are there to hear the Guardian lineup performing the Guardian record, I mean, I'm sure they're going to want as close to the original as possible. But having said that, many artists are never satisfied with their finished product. And, you hear things you wish you had done differently. So did you and the band try to give these songs anything that you did not give in the recording? And I don't mean trying to let's have some fun with it, but more or less like, I didn't like the way I sang that chorus on the record. Therefore, I'm not going to repeat that because I never liked it to begin with. I'm going to try something different. Did you or anybody else in the band take that route with trying to switch it up a little bit, like correcting past mistakes in your mind?
Yeah. No, that's a good point. I did myself as the vocalist. There were a few things. There was something, a couple things in the Valley of the Dolls where, you know, I don't know what it is about back then, but, you know, there's a lot of vocalists that were singing in that high register. And it was kind of a natural progression for my voice after Spectre and going into Guardian. And I was just singing. I felt strong. And I was just singing in the stratosphere. And there was a few things in some of the songs that were just like, just over the top, that were just like unnecessary. You know what I mean? And kind of like, you know, I shouldn't have gone that high. I shouldn't have done that note because, you know, it would have been better if I did something different. So there were a few of those. One of them I know in Valley of the Dolls, they changed something up a little bit. And I didn't do a couple things because I thought they sounded actually cheesy. So yeah, that's a good point.
You're talking about wailing instead of singing.
Yeah, something like that. Okay. Yeah, I forget exactly what I was doing, but yeah. So that's in tangent with, you know, what I was talking about, changing some things up for myself to make transitions a little bit easier, or like you just said, you know, to like eliminate something that I probably didn't like from the beginning that slipped through with the album, you know. And also, you know, back then with the analog recording and the actual EQing and the mixing, I sounded really thin. And, you know, I get quite a few comments about that, you know, well, I'm a nasally singer and, you know, being in stratosphere like that and it sounded thin. Well, it did. I don't think it was like a true representation of my singing voice. You know, doing this live stuff I thought was good because I could sing, you know, the live, it just got this texture to it, and I could be a little bit more, you know, forceful and growly, and it's more of a raw sound rather than over-refined or sterile. So I'm hoping that, you know, my voice live will be a different kind of perspective listening to this versus the studio album where everything just sounds just over, you know, just sterile. And the live thing would I think that voice sounds just a little, you know, it's still in, you know, stratosphere, but it sounds a little bit more textured.
Black Knight Meditations, WSCA 106.1 FM. I'm talking with John Arch of Fate's Warning, Awaken the Guardian Live, coming out this month. Blu-ray, DVD, CD, there's vinyl, T-shirts, there's even a large book, which I'm getting. So, John, let's talk about the recording and the filming of these performances at Keep It True and Power Prog. There's audio and video recording of the shows. Obviously, that can be nerve-wracking for a guy like you. I'm sure it probably gets on your nerves before you take before you take the stage. Well, you know, I know. People who've told me no, come on,
dude. It was the year when I found out we were doing it. That whole year was like, I stressed before the whole thing. I can't explain it, but it's you know, that's just the way I am. But
and us fans, we know you can be a nervous guy when it comes to things like this, with anybody, a recording, audio and video recording of a show can be nerve wracking, especially right before you take the stage. But once you're on the stage, were you overly aware of it? Were you thinking, okay, these guys are off the stage left, off the stage right with cameras, they're walking around, maybe they're getting in my way, or oh, I've got to make sure I sing properly because this is being recorded. I mean, were you overly aware of it, or while you're on stage, are you in the moment and you just forget that even happens? Where were you while you were on stage? Were you aware of that?
Okay, well, let me first say that I was not told this was going to be recorded until after I committed to the show, so that's just a little tidbit.
Okay.
But, yeah, that's a good question. So, I think true to form, just like in the old days, you know, when you hit the stage and the lights go on, they're bright, they're hot, you can barely see what's going on out there. And I think you come to this, primitive realization that flight or fright response, you have to kind of suppress it. Or it's too late now. It's showtime. And there's so much going through your mind, of course, because anything can go wrong at any time, you know, in a live situation. And, of course, after not playing for 30 years with these gentlemen, that's a thought that crosses your mind. But I think maybe it takes a song or maybe a song and a half before I actually start to settle down a little bit. It's that flight or fright thing where, you know, okay, so there's not going to be a murder scene up here. Everything's going to be fine. You start to work things out and you start to, I start to focus on, you know, maybe concentrating a little bit more on what I'm doing. And then you start to actually visually make eye contact with the audience because, you know, you have a feeling, okay, everything's going to be okay, and you relax a little bit. And then it becomes a different surreal experience. You are more in the moment, and you're starting to look around and seeing, the reaction in the audience. You're actually looking at your fellow bandmates and maybe a little smile here and there, like, okay, you know, we might make it through the night here. And then, of course, you know, as far as the cameras were concerned, I knew we were going to be recorded, but I also knew that's one thing that I really needed to put out of my mind, which is really hard for me to do, to not focus on something. But somehow I managed. I just said, all right, we're going up, and whatever happens, happens. There's going to be cameras there. There's 12 of them. They're all over the place. And I really actually, when I looked down into the pit in front of me, there was one cameraman. I noticed him quite often, but I just looked away. And the only other time I really saw cameras, like this boom kind of like came down out of the ceiling out of nowhere. It was pretty much like right on the side of my face. And as I'm singing, I'm like, this is kind of freaky, but whatever. It's like, just keep singing. So I was able to put that out of my mind and get through the show. And then, of course, when the show is over, I am in heaven, you know, because it's just a relief that, you know, you're well-received and that everything went okay.
So the band did perform, as we were saying, four tracks from the first two albums at each show. And The Apparition and Damnation, obvious choices, of course. Epitaph and Kyrie Eleison, I think were obvious as well. Night on Brocken for one show was great. Great choice. So how did you come to these tracks? There were wind up being five different tracks chosen. How did you come to decide these particular ones? Were there other tracks rehearsed that didn't quite make it? What went into those decisions?
Well, what we did was we just said, hey, okay, let's think back to when, you know, we were playing, you know, as a band long ago. And I think we all remembered, you know, which songs went over better and which we thought were stronger songs. And they're the ones that you mentioned along with Epitaph. So it was pretty much, just a vote kind of thing. And actually, the other four gentlemen were voting for Pirates of the Underground. And it's like, I don't even remember that song. What does it even sound like? And so then I listened to it, and it all came back to me, and my feeling about the song was, musically, there's a lot of, you know, shifting going on, and it was kind of disjointed for a vocalist to even write over, you know, what I was writing over. So I remember feeling that way from day one with that song, like I never really liked what I was singing over it, and really didn't really like it as a song, pretty much. So I kind of, you know, beg, borrowed, and steal to, you know, please, you know, could we, like, look at another option? So that's when, you know, they said, all right, if you really don't like it. And so Germany, you know, Night on Brocken was a great choice since it's based on their lore and their fables, Night on Brocken. And then we figured we'd mix it up because I voted for Kyrie, because I always like that song live. It's fast and it's driving. And that's how, you know, Kyrie was added to the list for the American show. So it's kind of a diplomacy and what went over well back in the day.
So did you only rehearse the tracks that you voted upon and agreed that, okay, these will be the ones? Or did you rehearse some tracks that just you were like, nah, this isn't working, we're not going to do these?
No, we kind of went with what we knew went over well back in the day, and we just stuck with that. And, you know, we had a lot, you know, all that material to learn. No, we just rehearsed what we added to that list.
All right, so you're obviously not a fan of Pirates. Okay, and oddly enough, I was going to be asking you about that song later on. We can scratch that. I think we just got the answer. okay, so what were some other songs that you were like, yeah, you know, I really like to do these for these shows that were not included? Or were the ones that were included the ones you wanted?
Pretty much the ones that, yeah. The ones that I wanted were the ones that we played. I mean, there was a couple, like, you know, when we were saying, okay, what do we want to do off Night on Brocken? And I listened to it over and over again, trying to, you know, The Calling came to mind. That's a pretty cool song that I was, you know, thinking about bringing up. And then Orphan Wow. Gypsy off of Spectre was another one that I always liked to sing that I just didn't bring up because, as far as time on the stage, it's an hour and whatever, hour and a half. And I'm not really sure how long we were on stage, but we had a certain criteria of, you know, the time frame, and everything was, you know, we just couldn't add any more songs to it. So, you know, but there were a few songs that, you know, if they had said, you know, hey, let's do Orphan Gypsy or something, I would have been on board with all that.
Awesome. Now, we know that Jim is not particularly fond of the first three Fates albums, and those of us who are fanboys absolutely worship those albums. And so what were the other guys thinking with performing those old songs? You know, were they thinking, no, let's not, or, yeah, we want to do these, or, you know, it was Jim's, like, I mean, I'm trying to get a sense of what everybody in the band where the vibe was in the room when you're having this discussion and you're putting it together. Because, again, for the fans, this is a huge thing. I mean, first of all, even Jim with Fates performing these songs on albums he doesn't even like and never performs these songs, this is amazing, and having this lineup. So how did you wind up with those songs? Like, did Joe say, you know, well, actually, I do want to perform Orphan Gypsy, or you know, what was the vibe in the room when you guys were talking about those first two records outside of Awaken the Guardian? I mean, heavy discussions, or was it like no big deal?
Well, I think what you're asking is a couple dynamics to that question. You know, as far as what the guy said, you know, when we were in rehearsal, you know, everybody was on board, especially Jim. Jim was actually, you know, he was the impetus, I think, for doing this. So I don't think it was a question of, going to old stuff or whatever. We knew, you know, that what we were doing, and everybody was psyched about it. You know, Steve and Joe and everybody was into it, and they wanted to do it. And I don't think there was any issue with playing the older stuff. I think, I want to word this correctly, I understand, you know, as far as, you know, Jim is concerned, I think that probably is, you know, when I split from the band and they were to continue, you know, they took a different direction and, you know, how do I word this? Not that, you know, that he just wanted to move on, and not that he wasn't really fond of what we did. You know, what we did is the roots. It's the beginning. It's the start of Fate's Warning, and you can't deny your past or your roots or the origin of a band. You know, they are the foundation and the groundwork for anything you do in the future. But having said that, you know, I understand that, you know, there's always been this battle royale, whether, you know, on Facebook, you know, which vocalist, John Arch or Ray Alder, and then a fight breaks out.
And, yeah, that's,
you know,
silly.
Out of control. It's like, it's all good. To me, I really appreciate it when fans like both eras of Fate's Warning early, and with Ray. Ray's got a fantastic, warm voice. They've made some incredible music over the years. So I think both factors of Fate's Warning have contributed to, you know, the overall. It's the music. It's all about the music. It's not about the politics or this or that. I heard Jim say that he actually, you know, during the rehearsal, he was rehearsing, everybody's rehearsing on their own. He said he actually was enjoying, you know, going back and playing that stuff. Because,
awesome.
You know, I actually, you know, in my opinion, you know, Guardian to me, it's got some of the most, it's the most complex album, I think, in the whole Fates Warning catalog, as far as I'm concerned. And that doesn't mean, that, you know, the newer stuff is any less difficult. It's always difficult, especially the longer you go on, to remain, you know, creative and to keep up, you know, keep summoning up creative stuff from your soul. It's harder. So, you know, I hope I answered your question, and I want to tread lightly. But
no, I understand. I understand, of course.
I think what I said might relate to, you know, Jim moving on with the current Fate's Warning, and not, you know, the fans always, you know, asking him about, you know, the old stuff, because, you know, a lot of people really enjoyed the old stuff, and, you know, why aren't you playing that live, and this and that, and, you know, am I making any sense?
You absolutely are, and I do understand what you were saying. You know, obviously, that scene, with the old school fans, you know, even including those of us who like both eras, I think that's silly choosing one of the other, it's ridiculous. But it's been in the press over the years, you know, when Jim's asked about that, and he's just being honest. He's not particularly fond of the records. Okay, that's fine. But when you go to see the band live, And then you finally get to hear these songs live. You're like, oh, well, you know, I wonder how Jim feels about this because he's not particularly fond of it. But then there are other guys in the band and they were there and, you know, they contributed to these songs. So I just kind of wanted to get a sense of, you know, who said what, like not like there was any sort of contentious or any sort of, you know, issues, but like who said what, like who said, yeah, let's make sure we don't forget Night on Brocken, because it was of the three records that you did. It was the one, it was the odd album out. You know what I mean by that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so I'm trying to get a sense, did Frank say, you know what, I wasn't on those first two records, so can we just stick to, you know, I'm not saying that's what was happening, just trying to get a sense of what those discussions were. Because again, for fanboys like us, this is huge. This is a big deal. So we're trying to get to as much information about it as possible. But I will tell you this.
No, I totally understand where you're coming from. Yeah. It really, what it boils down to is we all committed, wasn't even my idea, but we all committed to it, and we knew what we had to do. And during the process, Jim actually, you know, stated that he was enjoying playing, you know, playing the old stuff, because it was kind of fun, you know, once we dug into it. So going back to the original question, it was almost like when we were choosing the songs off, it's like, okay, let's just find the worst songs that we don't want to play. And we actually did that. I forget what song it was that we were considering. And then I got an email, like, you know, from one of the guys, I absolutely despise playing this.
You got to remember what song that is.
I'll have to think about it if it comes to mind.
If you think about it before we're done tonight, I want to hear it. And who was the person that despises that song? I got to know. But I will tell you. I will tell you this. I am
just opened up a big can of worms, didn't I?
Oh, it's just radio. Nobody's listening. So I am.
You guys are up in the sticks, right?
Hey, that's the beauty of
Street frogs and stuff like that.
The beauty of streaming online, no matter how much in the weeds we may be, which we're not. You are, not us, but beauty of streaming online. And I've tweeted out that we're doing this interview now. So, yeah, everybody's tuning in like, okay, let's hear what John has to say about this. So, again, you're on the spot here. But I got to tell you, I'm convinced. I have been convinced over the years, for so many years, I will never hear Fate's Warning with or without John Arch performing Misfit or Soldier Boy live, two of my absolute favorite songs, and not just Fate's Warning, but overall, you know. So when you go on tour, John, which you have to do, just, you know, if you haven't figured that out already, you need to tour, even if short tours.
Well, see, the songs you just brought up, you said Soldier Boy, I forgot all about, you know, that was so long, I just forgot about that. You know, some of these songs I just totally forgot.
No, I want to say I understand. I guess I do, but it's like, really? But Misfit and Soldier Boy, I love those songs.
Real quickly, I mean, what we were just talking about, I think a lot of, a lot of bands, their early stuff, I don't know, maybe they listen to it so much that they just get tired of hearing it. I'm not sure. I know I had a point, but I lost it.
Okay, well, let's pull it back into the Wake Indie Guardian Live, which is, again, why you're calling in to talk about the goings-on of what you're doing here. Is we've got this release to promote that's coming out on the 28th. Again, DVD, Blu-rays, CDs, vinyl, T-shirts, and, oh, yeah, this is so awesome. But going back to the performances, the recording of these performances, do you remember for Atlanta and or Germany, do you remember how you were feeling and what you were thinking backstage after these shows? When you stepped off stage, I mean, it certainly wasn't coke and strippers, but I mean, did you give any thought backstage and like, kind of like, were you just decompressing? Were you thinking about, wow, we just did that and made so many people so happy, you've wanted this for so long? Or were you just like, yeah, you know, show's over, whatever? Or hey, was it indeed coke and strippers? I don't know. You tell me. What do you remember? What you were thinking, yeah, and what was going on backstage?
Unfortunately, not as none of that.
Yeah, I know.
Like wine and cheese, you know. but no, what I've done in the past, and it seems like what I always do. A lot of bands, they just disappear, you know, to the dressing room, and whatever they do, what they do, they decompress. But I tell you what, I walked off stage. I went to the dressing room for like 5 minutes. And I come right out because there's a lot of fans that are just, you know, they're still out there in the hallways and stuff. And I came out to see a lot of friends that I knew were going to be there. There was, like, even in Germany, there was quite a few people that went over from the U.S., my friends. And then I have, like, a ton of Facebook friends that were going to the show also. So I wanted to go out, and I wanted to talk to them all and meet some of the people I've been talking to and put some, faces to those names. So I went out, you know, all sweaty and whatever, and I just think that everybody you know, appreciates that, because, you know, a lot of them, you know, they start to hustle out the door, the venues, you know, they'll say, okay, time to go, time to go. So I made sure, like, and both shows that I went out immediately and talked with people and signed, you know, did autographs and things like that. You know, I'm humbled by that stuff. I think these people come to see you, you know, no matter how good or bad the performance was. I just think it's, you know, common courtesy to meet up with everybody and chat. And so that's actually, that helps me decompress, because it takes my mind off of what might not have gone good during the show. I'll give you a little tidbit of something that happened at Prague Power. That's pretty interesting, but things like that. So, but I'm a very happy person, ear to ear smile, that for some reason, it's almost like with me, I don't know why I'm like that. I survived some kind of combat mission or something. I came
right.
home alive or something. I don't know. But I'm very relieved and very happy, and I try to be gracious and talk to everybody.
It's WSEA Portsmouth, Black Name Meditations, 106.1 on your FM dial. I am Mark on air Friday nights with Black Name Meditations, talking all things Fate's Warning and Awaken the Guardian. John Arch is on the line. I hope you're having a good time, because I sure as hell am, talking about so much that I've wanted to put out there to anybody in the band, but certainly I didn't think it would be to you, John. So again, thank you for doing this. I appreciate it. We're only about 5% of the way done, so we'll be done around 4:30 a.m.
So that's great. Let me get some more coffee.
So for these recordings, did you do any vocal overdubs?
Yes. But let me say that everybody who does a, you know, filming always goes back into the studio. And some of them sprinkle a lot of fairy dust and do a lot of auto-tune and a lot of finagling with the recordings. But early on, you know, when Jim and I got together, because we did have to fix a few drum parts and a few guitar parts, and there were some vocals to be fixed also. So we went into the studio, and the first thing Jim and I talked about, like, okay, so what are we going to do here? And Jim said to me, you know, he knows how I am, and that this is not a studio album, and, you know, it has to sound live. We can't, you know, we can't do too much to it. And so I understood, but of course, once we got into it, you know, I'm like really, I don't know, fickle about leaving anything sharp or flat to go. But yeah, so he had to talk me down off the cliff a couple times, you know, when I wanted to do something over. So let me say, I would have to say that 75-80% of it is left alone, so it's got that live feel to it. Only thing that was fixed were some of the serious lead balloons that came out of my mouth, you know, that there was no way I was going to let them go. I had been working with, I don't know if I should switch over to this or not, but yeah, I've been working with in-ears for these two shows. They were brand new to me, and there's a couple mistakes that I made, and especially at Prague Power, I started turning my in-ears up, and you know, because it makes it a little bit easier to sing when you can actually hear yourself. So the mistake I made was turning the in-ears up too loud, and I didn't realize I was singing more to my voice than I was to the guitars, because I was starting to drown the guitars out of my mix. So unbeknownst to me, I think I'm singing on key over here, and, you know, I would go sharp, and almost, there was only a few sections, but there was one, I don't know, maybe it was a phrase or one line of a song where I actually sang it like a half step higher. I was dumbfounded, like, I've never sounded like, how the heck did I do that? But we figured it out that I had my in-ears up too loud, and I was drowning out the guitar. So those were some of the things that I had to fix. But other than that, really, we didn't do a lot. Now, having said that, little tidbit, at Prague Power, we did our sound check, and everything sounded great at sound check. And then it was time to hit the stage. We all hit the stage. The lights are up. And the first note is hit, and I'm like, what is going on in my in-ears? We had a perfect mix, and now all I have is Frank Oresti blaring in both ears so loud that it was actually hurting my ears. I had to turn the in-ears down. But I could not hear me, the drums, Jim. I heard nothing but Frank. And so, you know, what to do? Well, you know, you just hit the first note of the first song. You just kind of have to plow through it and do the best you can. So somehow I remained intact, and somehow I made it through that song. And then Valley of the Dolls, the second song, I made it through the first verse, but then the second verse, you know, there's some off shifting of the guitars and there's guitar harmonies going on, and I couldn't hear anything but Frank's. So I totally lost my place. And I looked over at the sound guy. At the same time, I just stopped singing the second verse. And simultaneously, I see the sound guy with his feet up on the board and his head jacked backwards with his mouth open, and he's sound asleep.
Ha, ha, ha. That's awesome.
I'm thinking to myself, what am I going to throw at him? I just bought my brand new wireless mic, so I wasn't going to throw that off. I was thinking of untying my shoe and throwing my shoe, but it would have taken too long. So anyways, somehow I got back on track just before the end of the second verse. And then one of the guitar techs saw that everybody was kind of in distress about, you know, the sound up there. So he ran over to the board and somehow he just got a little bit of resemblance of us being able to hear ourselves. But it was enough where at least we could keep, engaged with each other and stay on track with the songs. So that was a biggie.
Oh, I can imagine.
Yeah, so we're talking about going in, what we did in the studio with the video editing, just to make sure everything's in sync and they pick the best camera angles and all that stuff. So somehow we had to salvage a band that, or a vocalist missing half of a second verse. So I don't know how many seconds it was. Some people didn't notice. They were just having a good time. I looked out at the audience and some people, like, they kind of looked at each other, like, confused. And then to us on stage, it sounded like a very short train wreck, but somehow we ended up, luckily we ended up back on track again. So we were able to fix that. That was one of the major things that we had to fix in the studio.
And I was hoping you were going to tell me that when we watch the Blu-ray when it comes out, that when we see Frank taking a dive, it's because you tripped him from causing your yeah. in-ear problems. Damn you, Frank!
I know, it wasn't his fault, but yeah, for sure. So when you do see the DVD, you can look for any lip syncing, you know what I mean? But I'm pretty sure with that section right there, I had to watch the video, I had to sing exactly, to make it work, we had to sing exactly to, if I did any fixes, we just had to make sure I sang exactly the same way.
Right.
Like I said, it's damn near, it's close to, pretty raw as we could let it go as.
So when you were saying 75 to 80%, does that mean your vocals or just overall the entire band's performance?
I think overall, it'll be the same. And probably, it's hard to put a number on that because it was like, there might have been, like, two words that were really sharp or something like that that maybe I punched in. But I think overall, the whole kit and caboodle with guitars, drums, vocals.
All right. And, yeah, and when it comes to overdubs, I mean, a lot of it is a little bit of cleaning up as opposed to, changing something, which I think is pretty much on all live albums, cleaning up and not just completely changing. But it sounds like...
Right. There are some live albums that are, they're not live.
Yeah.
Everything has been done over vocals, guitars, you name it, and to me, you know what, if it sounds too perfect to be true, then it is. And I think the fans pick up on that. I've gone to see a couple bands and immediately you can tell, I went to go see the current lineup of Fate's Warning, Queensryche with Salvatore.
Hey, same. It's very easy to make that mistake. They're the same band. They sound exactly the same. So easy, yeah.
This band was like, they had total backing tracks. It was lip syncing. There was no singing whatsoever. You could tell it was actually, better than the album. I'm not talking about Queensryche. I'm talking about the opening band. And, everybody in the audience is looking at each other, shaking their heads. And, you're paying to see a live band, and you want that experience. And then somebody, it's all backing tracks, lip syncing, and it sounded way too good. It sounded better than the album. People were really disappointed, and a lot of people were really upset. So I think we realized that, and you know, there's no autotune, no sprinkling fairy dust. It's just basic, you know, what we needed to do, but we wanted to retain, you know, a good percentage of it live.
So we've been talking about Awaken the Guardian live again, coming out on April 28th, but let's talk a little bit about Awaken the Guardian, the album from 1986. Obviously, it's beyond absolutely amazing. My favorite song, pretty much since day one, has always been Giant's Lore. I don't think you guys ever performed that one live. Do you have any memories of like writing the song, recording the track? Anything come to mind about Giant's Lore?
Very little, but you're right. I don't think we played that one live. Very little, if at all, back in the day. But that was the first song, really. I think Frank Oresti brought down, you know, what you're hearing. The guitar is there, what you're hearing. And so it's really the first time that I put anything down to Frank's stuff. You know, it was always Jim and I working together. And so when I first heard it, I'm like, you know, kind of didn't know which way to approach it. But that song probably came together faster than any other one. It was, I don't know, kind of a natural feel to it. And I have to admit that I wasn't really a huge fan of the song, you know, for quite a while, but then it grew on me. And it's actually fun to sing live. And you know, a lot of people, I'm surprised, a lot of people, they feel the same way. It's one of their favorite songs.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So that's pretty cool. And that's about all I remember of it was that, again, Frank wrote that. It was kind of different working with something that Frank had written, but I was glad that it turned out okay.
My other favorite song, you know, I've got two that I say this is my favorite. Now, I know most people would either say Guardian or Fata Morgana or Prelude to Ruin, the obvious ones. But to me, it's always been Giant's Lore. But when I listen to Valley of the Dolls, I'm like, this is my favorite song on the record. And I love Valley of the Dolls. It's likely the most straight ahead, you know, just straight ahead traditional metal tracks. You know, it's got that killer riff. And I would say it's unlike anything else off the record for that very reason. You know, it's the one that's the least, for lack of a better term, proggy.
Right.
And lyrically, you know, obviously it's not exactly kind to the glam scene of the era. So with the song Valley of the Dolls, how much of that was that element drove the purpose of the lyric writing, or did that kind of just get worked into the lyrics, you know, just happenstance? You know, what was the purpose behind the lyrics of Valley of the Dolls?
Well, I think that was kind of a little cut on the glam bands, obviously. You know, I think every metal band, you know, that, how do I say this? But some people feel a certain way about the glam bands, you know, they really like them. And yep. It was kind of like just a little, you know, I don't know, little cut on them. That's what the lyrics are about. Usually when Jim writes something, it's pretty much, I have to close my eyes and listen to the music and get a feel for it, you know, and like, okay, so how is this driving me emotionally, you know? And then you think of like, you know, what context, what kind of lyrics or what theme, what would go along with this? And, you know, I don't know. I think maybe I was reading one of those, you know, the metal magazines like Metal Hammer or Kerrang or something at that time. Mm-hmm. And I think I saw a picture on the cover, and I don't even know what band it was, but, you know, it's full-blown girly makeup and, you know, just over the top. And I'm like, why do guys dress like this? It's really weird. I don't know, you know, what this is all about. So I think that was the impetus for the song. And I agree, it's kind of a standout on Awaken the Guardian because it's not a song that really is, it's not mythological lyrics or that kind of, that the rest of the songs are rooted in. So it's kind of a standout in that way, too.
Yeah, it's got that traditional, almost thrashy type riff. And yeah, great song. And whenever that one comes on, I'm like, yeah, I just want to listen to it over and over again. But yeah, that one and Giant's Lore, those are definitely my two top tracks on the record. And so I want to ask you about the Spectre, because the Spectre Within, I remember when Awaken was out, I felt that Spectre was better. And I think it was a case of, well, you know, I was just more familiar with it. And it took some time for me to realize that what the band was finally doing with the second record, The Spectre Within, was more fully realized on Awaken the Guardian. I'm sure you know what I mean by that. And you've commented about a couple songs. You already talked about Pirates. Not a big fan of that one. We all know The Apparition is a standout cut. And in fact, I would say side two on the record is pretty much, you know, what the fans would say are the top tracks on the record. But you mentioned Orphan Gypsy, and it's funny. I was going to bring that song up because that's one of the ones I wanted you to comment about, whether you remember writing the lyrics or the recording of the song. Do you have any stories related to the track Orphan Gypsy?
Oh man, I'm really old and
I got you. So I stumped you.
yeah. That's not hard these days. Really, is what I do remember about it is I enjoyed singing it live. You know, back in the day when my voice was in really good shape, and those high notes came, I just hit it with a lot of force and passion. And you know, there was very little of Fate's Warning on video way back then. It was like really crappy camcorders, you know, or I don't know. I think they were back then. It must have been something like that. But, you know, the sound was horrendous. The mic would clip, you know, over a certain dB, and the video was horrible. But I saw a video clip on YouTube of Orphan Gypsy. I think we played at, I think it was from Blondie's in Detroit. And, you know, so here, it was during our youth, and I just watched it. You know, I thought I was going to cringe, but actually, you know, it was respectable, and I wasn't too embarrassed by it. But Orphan Gypsy was the song that that was shared on YouTube, and you know, I just saw how much fun I was having singing it, and I remember it just being a cool song to sing because it is challenging vocally. And I guess, you know, it's one of those things where if you hit those notes, you know, on stage, you know, whatever, it feels good. As far as the writing and stuff like that, you know, it's so long ago, it's kind of like a blur on how I came up with this stuff. But like I said, it's more like, you know, when something is given to me, it's how I embellish it and how it moves me emotionally and what direction I go in. And then, of course, you always have to come up with a topic or you know, to also, you know, go along with it.
Now, I do want to talk about you, John, you know, away from all the music. Before we get to that, though, I do want to touch on Night on Brocken, because I still feel to this day that is the forgotten Fate's Warning album. You know, not just the John Arch era, but overall. You know, obviously, it's the first record. It had more of the Maiden influence. It was before the prog was really started and being worked in with Spectre and again, fully realized on Guardian. But Night on Brocken, and sure, some of this is because, well, you know, I was there back in the 80s, so that's how I got into the band, you know, when I got that cassette handed over to me by a friend of mine at school. The record has stuck with me to this day, and I feel like it's underserved by the metal community. There's some great songs on that record that still stand up to this day, and one of them, oddly enough, I'm going to ask you about this, is Shadowfax, an instrumental. I always have loved that song. You know, it's pretty basic, pretty simple, but it works. It's got a groove to it. Do you remember, was that song always meant to be an instrumental? Did you just not write lyrics to it? How did that wind up becoming an instrumental cut? Do you remember that?
Yeah, that was Jim King Dolan had an instrumental, and that's what it was designed to be, and that's what it was. That, you know, which is great. It's like, okay, one little song I have to write lyrics to. Cool.
So A Day Off for You is what that song is. Okay. I love that song. I think it's fantastic. And
again,
it's very simple. It's very basic, but it works.
To hear somebody else's, you know, take on something, you know.
So, and you said earlier you don't remember, you had forgotten about Soldier Boy.
Yeah. Yeah, there's probably a couple songs that you mentioned right now. It's like if you ask me what songs are on the album, I don't know. You might even stump me there. It's like I haven't listened to it, you know, in so long that, you know, the songs that we did off of Brocken, Damnation, I know there's Misfit, there's Shadowfax.
Yeah.
That's about it.
It has been a while, so I know, I understand. But do you remember about the whole album cover fiasco? You remember that, right? Three album
covers.
Yeah,
that was, you know, when you talk about a band that is like just forming, and it's that was our very, very first attempt at writing original music. So, you know, we had no idea what we were doing, and it's, you know, we were just putting our heads together trying to get some original music out. But, yeah, so the album cover was basically a neighbor of mine at one time, and, you know, he told me what a great artist he was and this and that. I said, well, hey, you know, we're looking for somebody to do an album cover, and I remember him, you know, turning it in really late, and there was a deadline, and we took a look at it, and it's like, oh, my God. What is this? So I don't know. It's like we went with that, you know, just because of a time constraint. And then, I don't know, we actually...
But come on, it was 1984. I mean, you could get away with some, well, yeah, almost get away with a 1984. And actually...
Well, true. I've actually seen worse covers than that.
Oh, sure. But, oh, sure. And more recently,
and
too,
then,
of
I
course.
Don't know, to salvage it, you know, I think Metal Blade put up a very, very creative picture of the moon.
The moon. I love that. I think that's so classic because it is so simple. You know, it's a more simpler time of Fate's Warning. But actually, the Bonzai Records album cover with the Burning Witch, I like that one. That's probably my favorite of the three. I just think that's killer. But your first album, new band, and you get three album covers. So it's just funny. I mean, you know, pick one for your mood, I guess, you know. So, all right. So, so we've talked about Awaken the Guardian Live. We've talked about, you know, the old days. We've talked about you doing the press for this. And, you know, we touched on the fact that you will go on tour very soon. So let's get into, let's talk about you, John, you know, the regular guy, you know, the guy who's the mountain bike riding guy. You live in the middle of nowhere in Connecticut. Let's talk about you away from music. You know, when you aren't grinding the 9 to 5, when you aren't riding your bikes, you know, what do you do? What takes up your spare time? The stuff that the fans don't already know about. Who is John Arch away from all of that? Tell us something we don't already know about you.
Grumpy old man that yells at kids to get off my lawn. No.
Get off my lawn!
Well, to me, there's like not enough hours in the day. I mean, maybe the majority of Americans feel that way, too.
Yeah.
You know, I work full-time. I always have. I've always kept my, you know, feet planted firmly on the ground and always followed my gut reaction on certain things. I am a mountain biker. I like to road ride. I like to, you know, camp hike in the winter and... you know, it's just an outdoors kind of person. And to me, it's actually therapy for me. If I don't do it for, you know, a while, I start to get grumpy. So I need to get on my bike and ride. I like to get on my Harley and ride. I like to do, I think, normal things that everyone likes to do. That's one thing that, you know, the music thing, you know, with the full time, it's just, it becomes your life. And I don't know if I want, I didn't want that. I wanted to be able to do, you know, things that I like to do, and have more free time and just be more, you know, financially secure. Really, I don't know what else I can say. My son has grown and he's left the house, and, you know, so we're kind of like, what do you call them, empty nesters over here. So, you know, I got my room to hang out, my man cave, and, you know, it all works out. I'm free to, you know, do a lot of things that I want to do now. But I do look forward to, there's a spot that I seem to always need to fill, you know, with the music. So, you know, although I've been lucky to have been able to do what I've done, but also participate and do some things, you know, and musically, you know, like release more material and do, you know, solo album and a couple other things. So I've been lucky in that respect to have good people to play with and connections. And, so life is pretty busy, but I guess we might as well do it now, right, before we can.
Are you still a Detroit Lions fan, or did you give up years ago?
Oh, my God. I gave up on that a long time ago. It seems like any team that I, you know, it's like, okay, I'm from New England. I should be a New England Patriots fan, but
I'm
for
not,
some reason...
No.
You know, I'm not.
And, yeah, I'm not either, dude. I hear you.
Yeah.
I'm a Falcons guy. I'm a Falcons fan. Yeah, you see how that worked out for me.
Yeah, right. Well, that's the same thing with me, too. Any team that I've ever picked, okay, I'll go on with this team. They've always turned out to be the biggest losers, you know, and it's like I just get tired of it. It's like, okay, I just don't know how to pick them. But there are fans, you know, whatever, Yankees, Red Sox fans, that no matter, you know, they're diehards, and no matter what happens, that's their team, and they stick with them, you know. So, I don't know. And now I'm at the point where I usually don't even watch football until it gets down to the, you know, nitty gritty towards the playoffs. I can't even claim to be a true football fan anymore either.
Well, I still like the Lions. I was a Lions fan since I was a little kid, and I actually made it to the playoffs last year. Go figure. So you mentioned,
yeah, you know, things change. You know, they get, you know, different players and become better teams, and you know, it's a revolving door.
Well, as long as you stay a Red Sox fan, we'll be all set there. So
I'm not even a baseball fan at all, so I stay out of trouble. You know, it's like
well, being in Connecticut,
I like watching certain things, and I'll tell you one thing: I have a hat that's a Canadiens, you know, the hockey team.
Yeah.
And I'm not a hockey fan, but when I wear that hat, I get dirty looks like you can't imagine.
Oh yeah, of
and
course.
People like making nasty comments. You know, it's like, hey, whatever, dude, it's just a hat.
Well, especially up in New England, within Bruins territory, Canadians, yeah, that's like wearing a Yankees hat in Boston. You know, it's the same thing.
Yeah, you're putting your life in jeopardy.
Right.
Sure.
You know, you mentioned your man cave and football and all that. Did you watch that X-Files miniseries last year?
X-Files, no.
You didn't watch it? Oh, you got to watch it. I mean, I know you watched the series when it was on air back in the 90s. You got to watch it, dude. You got to watch it.
Oh, absolutely.
And hopefully it'll...
You know, I really don't even watch much TV anymore. If you ask me, you know, what do I watch? What's my favorite program? I don't know. We have a channel that just shows, like, concerts nonstop, Access TV or whatever. And really, when I sit down, it's like I'll turn the news on, and it's like, oh, man, nothing's ever going to change.
Right.
And I just put on the concert channel, and they run, you know, videos of, I don't know, Heart and you know, older artists and stuff, which is pretty cool to watch.
Cool. Well, hey, you should watch that X-Files because it's great for lyric writing inspiration for you on your upcoming music, which, speaking of your upcoming music and your tour, come on, we got to talk about that. Obviously,
okay.
It's obviously shrouded in secrecy. You know, it's cloaked in mystery, and you know, you're obviously not going to be able to say much now. But hey, if you talk about it now, you won't have to have it burden your soul. You know, you won't have secrets to keep. You know, you just let it go right there. You know, I'm not saying that. Oh, we expect the Resonance Part 2, but you know, throw us a bone here, John. Come on, give us something to go.
Yeah,
on here.
Well, you know, I guess what I can say is that. Nothing has been written in stone as of yet, but I'm currently working on lyrics and stuff. I hope I'm not repeating myself. I don't know what I've said earlier because I'm like, my brain is jello. So I'm working on lyrics and melody lines and song titles right now, and I have spoken to the powers that be, and I have planted the seed, and it's been well received, and I think it will bear fruit. How's that?
Powers that be. Interesting. All right. You've spoken to the boss. I get it. That can mean so many different things, I tell you.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's just say, I mean, I did a solo album at one point, and it won't be that.
Yeah.
So it'll probably be something else that I've done with the same person I've done it with.
Right. And yeah, no, I understand. I totally get it. But, you know, if there's a way to, you know, pull a little something extra out, you know, we'll see what happens. But but thank you for addressing that. I appreciate it.
Cool. That's what I'm focusing right now is, you know, I just have the desire to start writing again. And, you know, I know I take a notepad in my car with a magic marker driving to work, and I have an idea. I start jotting it down, and, you know, I wake up first thing in the morning with this idea, and I write it down. So those are like, that's like the beginnings of the way it's always happened. You get that creative flair. You just want to start writing and creating again. And so that's what I'm doing on my end, and it usually works out.
Well, John, thank you so much for your time. I really, really appreciate this. Spent an hour with us here on WSEA. I really appreciate your time. And thank you for your music. Thank you for taking part in these two shows. We are going to have the live recording on Blu-ray, on disc, on CDs, on vinyl, T-shirts. Packages are available. Awaken the Guardian Live is out April 28th on Metal Blade Records. Thank you so much for being a part of this, and we appreciate it. I'm glad you're doing the press for this. This is awesome. I never thought I'd get to be able to do a John Arch interview after all these years. So this is really something special for us fans. And I should point out, I want to make it clear too, that having Steve, Joe, and Frank there as well is just was equally as important. So I'm glad that they were a part of this. Hopefully I'll be able to talk to one or all of those guys soon. So thank you very, very much for your time. I appreciate it. Before I let you go, I want to say, hang on the line. Don't hang up yet after we're done here. I want to talk to you off air. But again, thanks. It's coming out April 20th. 28th, and your music that you will be involved in will be coming out in 2018. Can we say that? Possibly.
Yeah. Well, it's however long the process takes.
Right. Okay.
If things go, well.
All right. Well, you know what? You didn't say it, but we're still going to hold you to it. 2018. I appreciate it. And I got to tell you, okay. I will have you back on air in 2 years because we're going to talk about Night on Brocken Live, the 35th anniversary. It's going to happen. We got to make this happen, John. So I'll hold
good.
You to
I
that.
I guess you're going to roll me up there in a wheelchair.
All right. Thanks a lot, John. Appreciate your time and take care, brother.
I thank you too, man. Thank all the fans too for the support over the years. Thank you very much.
Awesome.